This week on Art on the Air features self-taught acrylic artist Mark Sanowski, whose work explores subjects in both black and white and in very bold colors. Next, lifelong student of military history, novelist M.B. Henry, who blends historical people and events with her fictional character stories. Our spotlight's on Nigel David's short film called The Midnight Owls, soon appearing in local film fests.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art on the Air. Actually, Spotlight is his first time back here. He's been on a previous interview with another Art on the Air. And we're going to talk about a new, I had it originally as a documentary, but it's actually kind of a short horror film. And it's going great. Nigel David is going to be here, and he's going to tell us all about that. Some of the things he's been doing in filmmaking, and everything. So The Midnight Owls is the current one he's doing on. He's going to be working on some more. And so his focus has been on filmmaking here in the Chicago and Northwest Indiana area. Nigel, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Hey, how are you guys doing? I appreciate you having me back.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
So you were doing the nightclub thing there for a while. Well, that's the thing we had on the last interview, but I know you're no longer doing that. But tell us about the filmmaking. Maybe the history of how you got into filmmaking and what you're doing right now.
So I've always been wanting to make a movie. I've always wanted to make films. Just kind of kept it short, doing music videos, doing the Night of the Living Jam that I was on the air, you know, on your guys' show before with. And I just basically woke up one morning and I was like, you know what? I'm not getting any younger. I'm not getting any prettier. I'm going to go ahead and let's just go ahead and just knock this out. So we did Visible Lies, which is 44 minutes and 37 seconds, 9 months worth of work, a very learned experience. got to really hone the craft down. So when it was time to do The Midnight Owls, I basically got myself to a point where I would need to start all over. I grew a team of people from doing networking events in Chicago and Indiana, and basically met the main character, Sinister Sam, from Midnight Owls at a horror movie hookup type thing. Just walked through some curtains, saw the back of his head. I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. Started networking, got around to seeing his face, and I was like, that's Sinister Sam. Boom. And at that time, I had actually hired somebody to play the Sinister Sam, but I hadn't seen him. I saw Brian, and unfortunately, I had to jump on my phone, and before I even talked to Brian, I just texted the guy. I'm like, sorry, guy, you're fired, you know, and what? Yeah, I know, right? Went over, and I talked to Brian, and just introduced myself. I'm like, look, I'm Nigel David, filmmaker. You are Sinister Sam. You are the serial killer. Are you doing anything? Are you interested? And he's like, I got nothing better to do. And basically, from then on, it really did grow. So the movie The Midnight Owls is on YouTube. It's on my Nigel David Productions on YouTube. So you can see it's 18 minutes and 37 seconds. And basically through meeting Brian, I met the other co-star, who's Nora Willey. She plays two parts in the movie. and then built my team from doing networking, and now Nigel David Productions has grown exponentially. I mean, I have editor, I have a producer, I have you know, stage and prop guy, I got costume designers, and I actually just get to do the directing thing. So,
all right, you know, so it's, when your first one, you had a budget of $14, so it's sounding like you've you are in a different stratosphere now.
Well, honestly, Visible Lies cost me $44 to make, and Midnight Owls cost me $14. And people look at it and they watch it and they're like, "Wow, you spent $5,000-$10,000." I mean, I've even had people tell me, "It looks like you spent $20,000." And I was like, "No, I didn't. I wrote the screenplay and the story to my budget, which my budget was zero, which is just a thing. I'm also, it's a way of also saying that, you know what, you don't have to have a budget. If you are a filmmaker, if you have an idea, whether it be music, whether it be writing a book or writing or making a movie, you can do it. Just use your strength, you know, write to your strength." So, and that's what I did. And I was using basically just, you know, going guerrilla of, you know, what they call guerrilla filming.
Right.
And just basically, you know, when you see somebody coming, you just run. The old Ed Wood way of filming. But it was amazing. And again, I can't thank my team enough: Rob, Adam, Brian, Nora, Lucinda, Paige, my daughter, who's actually in the movie, is actually one of the victims in the movie. So yeah, it's been a good time, and we're really excited. We're going to be making the new the sequel here in November, we're going to be doing, hopefully have that up by spring, and then probably, because it's going to be a trilogy. And it's going to be telling the story, the full story, into three parts. And it's amazing. And I'm living my dream, and that's what matters.
So when you were deciding that you wanted to do films, was this the genre that first came to mind? Is this genre that inspired the filmmaking? Did you already have the idea?
I've actually, the idea for Sinister Sam, who's in this character, was actually a character I had created for an album I did, because I'm also a musician, like 12 years ago. So I've had this character rolling around in my head for all this time. And I was just like, you know what? And just, I mean, you know, first time, you know, filmmakers, you know, you make your horror, you make a comedy, which you're going to be making a comedy in spring with one of the characters, one of the people that plays in Midnight Owls, Lucinda, storyteller. We're actually going to be doing a comedy on her based on her life in the spring. But yeah, I'm a huge horror fan.
So Nigel, what do you film with?
Honestly, I have a ton of cameras. I have a ton of lights and everything. But you know what? I use my phone. It's my best camera. And there are major movies being filmed. 28 days later are going to be, are being filmed on iPhones. So there's no excuse, anybody. There's no excuse whatsoever. If you got an idea, pick up your phone, start filming. There you go.
That's Nigel David, and his newest film is The Midnight Owls. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing your new journey.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I appreciate it. Again, Nigel David Productions on YouTube. Check it out, The Midnight Owls.
Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Dawn Diamantopoulos of Highland Arts Council, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Mark A. Zanowski to Art on the Air. Mark is an artist from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. In 2007, with no formal training, he started painting murals in his children's room. Then, three landscape paintings followed for his wife's office. He continues to paint and show in art fairs, including for the Love of Art Fair in South Bend, Indiana, on February 7th and 8th of 2026. It's an indoor art fair, and it's in its 10th year, produced by the amazing Shireen Klein. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Mark. It's very nice meeting you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Mark, our first thing our audience always wants to know is the background of our guest. I call it their origin story. So tell us how Mark got from where you were to where you are now.
Well, you know, I grew up in the Milwaukee area, born specifically in Brown Deer. I'm 56 years old. But I think, you know, I think like a lot of kids, I was very interested in art. I loved to draw. I was always drawing, always coloring. And I was pretty advanced for my age. I remember some of the drawings I did when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I look back on them and they were really very good. So I had a lot of encouragement around me. But I was also interested in a lot of sports, whether it was baseball or football. But really it was art that was my escape, if you will. So as I went through high school, I did take a number of art classes. I did very well. I was very interested in pursuing it. But, you know, as you have conversations, what do you want to do with your life kind of thing? I decided to go a different route. And I was going to be an English teacher. So I did go to college to teach secondary English. It was really a challenge at the time, especially when I got out into doing the field work in the role of an English teacher. So I pursued that for a couple of years. But really, at the same time, using my creative skills, I was working in kitchens, you know, and a lot of young people did that, you know, working at, you know, fast food joints and that sort of thing. But I worked at a catering shop, in the Milwaukee area. And I started working there when I was, I think it was about 17 or so. And I worked there for 8 years, but it was such a great place to work. And it was a pivotal place to work in my life, because I actually started dating one of the girls that worked at the counter there, and she would eventually become my wife. And she actually asked me out on a date, which I'm grateful for, because I never would have asked her out on a date. But I went ahead and said yes. I made a picnic lunch for her and us, and we went down to Milwaukee's lakefront and had a great evening together. So really, you know, having Stephanie, my girlfriend at the time, she was always a big encouragement to me pursuing cooking and pursuing an education in the cooking field. So after about 8 years of working at this catering company, we went out to New York, and I attended the Culinary Institute of America. Spent several years out in the New York area. Did an externship in Maryland, on the Chesapeake Bay in St. Michael's, Maryland. And we were really having a great time meeting new folks. I was a little bit older because this was after college, pursuing a teaching certificate. But I decided to change to the culinary world. So I don't know, I think it was about 26, 27 at the time that we moved out to New York. So we spent several years there, returned to New York after Maryland, and I graduated from the Culinary Institute. And we went out into the professional world. I worked at some fine dining restaurants, the sort of restaurants that would be on the cover of Food & Wine magazine, that sort of thing, Bon Appetit. But we ended up in Florida, in Miami. But, you know, if you're not familiar with the restaurant industry, that can also be pretty tough, especially back then. It was before becoming a chef was something that people were really intrigued with. And I think when shows like, let's say, the Food Network came along and they were really glorifying the world of being a chef, I think things changed in restaurants where I don't want to say the job became easier by any means. I think it was more of, the work environment's really improved over the last 15 to 20 years as they were trying to draw people into the culinary field. So we were in Miami, and during that time, I decided to make a career change because we were working so many hours that I decided to look for a job that maybe there wasn't as many hours and was paying very, but still paid very well. And I ended up taking a position in a coffee shop, local coffee shop. but I worked my way up and it ended up being there for 25 years. So if you do,
so what time frame did you start out in Miami?
So in Miami, I think we were in Miami. I think we moved down there in 1994. I'm going to correct that. It was 96. And we stayed until 2000. But I had made the transition to working at this coffee shop. We decided that we were going to move back to Milwaukee because we were having our first child, our son, Sam. And it was the realization with all the hours that I was working in the culinary world that I wanted to spend more time with my family and our newborn. So I made that transition to the coffee shop, and we ended up moving back to Milwaukee because we needed babysitters. And that's where our parents were. So we moved back here, and this entire time, so this was 2000. So from 2000 to about, 2009 or so, I was just primarily focused on that work at the coffee, in the coffee industry, as well as raising my family. Now, it was about this time that I needed an escape from work. And as a lot of people do, they have old cans of paint sitting in their basement, rusting away, latex paint. And I decided, well, why don't I try something out? Just try dabbling with paint on a canvas that was laying around in the basement. And I really enjoyed it. So I decided to try painting, what did I do? Three landscapes. For my wife's office over at the hospital, where she's a psychologist. They were great paintings, but it was they weren't generally my own ideas. I was looking at landscapes and kind of teaching myself how to paint. But I was afraid of colors. I didn't have any formal training as far as a painter. Didn't have any color theory background, so I transitioned to just black and white for a number of years, for probably about 8 years. And I did an entire series on Christ, very large paintings, 60-inch paintings, 48-inch paintings. And I think I did about maybe 15 or 16 of those. But working full-time and painting, as artists know, can be really difficult because you can only complete maybe two or three paintings a year. You know, once you're working all day and then you've got to get all the paints out, and once you get started, well, then it's pretty much time to go to bed. So you know, it was a very slow process, but people loved the paintings and I was really developing my skills, but I was just doing them in black and white. And then I would say it was about 4 years ago that, well, let's say about 6 years ago, I started to dabble in color. And I decided, since I struggled with color, why not just paint with whatever colors I want? If I wanted to paint a dog purple, then I painted a dog purple. If I wanted to paint the cat green, I painted the cat green. And I'm really glad I did that because I fell in love with the big pop of the colors. So a number of friends, I painted for a few friends, painted their, you know, their pets. But I really fell in love with painting, first of all, our first dog, which was Lucy. And she was a Border Collie mix. We painted, you know, two of our cats. And then we got our first German Shepherd. And, you know, if you're a German Shepherd lover, German Shepherds are amazing. And we have just fallen in love with our first German Shepherd, Maisie. And she was my muse. So I decided to spend a full year studying Van Gogh, because I found myself being way too precise with my painting, almost like I was drawing. And I wanted to loosen up my brush strokes, like Van Gogh, make it really whimsical. And I was, you know, I was loving the big, bold colors. So I spent a year doing that. I think I did about 18 Van Gogh paintings where I put Maisie, our German Shepherd, into them. I didn't want it to just be a Van Gogh painting and my German Shepherd is in the painting. What I did was I would try to make it a little interactive. In one of the paintings, one of Van Gogh's figures is actually playing ball with Maisie. And a number of the paintings featured Maisie's orange ball. So it was great for kids, because kids would come along, But not all the paintings had the orange ball. But kids would come along and they would try to find the orange ball in the paintings.
That's so true. I like the one where Maisie has the pillow off the bed.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing that I was doing while I was painting the mangoes is I was coming up with ideas in my head. Sometimes before I was painting, I would kind of tell a story between Maisie and I, maybe a conversation, and I would translate that into a painting. Other times the story would come to me while I was actually doing the painting, because here I am in my studio and my German Shepherd is right at my side. I would literally just talk out loud to her. And every time she responded to me, she agreed on 90% of everything. So I actually took those conversations I was having with her and I turned those into stories that are suitable for all ages. So at the show in South Bend in February, folks will see that I've got these paintings with Maisie in the Van Gogh paintings, but there will also be short stories next to them. Not all the paintings have the stories, but most of them do. And it's fun to see, first of all, when people see my paintings, their faces really light up. But then when they really stand and they study them and they read the short stories, the stories behind them, it really occurred to me that I'm bringing joy to a lot of people's lives. And so that's really my primary goal. If you were to look on my Instagram, I think my line at the top is just hoping to bring you a little bit of joy and a smile to your face.
It's interesting because the pandemic, a lot of people were comforted by all the videos of mm-hmm. people's pets. I mean, it was fun. It ran the gamut of emotions depending on what was posted, but it really helped a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Yeah, I'm looking at your work as you're talking, and I especially love the dog portraits in clothing and all the different characters that you have created there. Mm-hmm. It's just really something. And of course, your work with Christ is so moving. It's black. All those are black and white, but they're just incredibly depth and moving. So working both in your monochrome and then moving to the really dynamic colors you have is really a jump.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you saying that because I think that artists want to invoke emotion, some type of reaction. And I feel that I've accomplished that in a way that is very passionate on one end or the other. One is very, very contemplative and sobering, if you will. But on the other end of the spectrum, it's bringing joy to people. And I've really made, when I started doing shows about 3 years ago, doing festivals, the number of people that walk past my booth and look in and their faces just light up, it is easily 90% of the folks that walk past. Is my art for everybody? No. It can be a little cartoonish. But even if they're not that into the piece, they can see the joy and the whimsical nature of them, and the colors.
So, what's Maisie's modeling fee?
Oh, a treat or two. And she's not very photogenic. She knows when she's getting a photograph taken, and she kind of turns away. So you got to catch her quick. But while I'm as I said, I was writing stories to go with them, and my daughter Zoe, she's my editor, so she would review the stories. Go through them, add corrections to help finish the project. But as we, the last 2 years, 2 years ago, we got our second German Shepherd. And his name is Manchego. And we just put him to the canvas. I put him to the canvas this past year. He's got four paintings so far. And I know you two can see in my studio here, the large painting behind me. I'm working on this one of Manchego. That's going to debut in South Bend at the show, so I'm excited to get that one finished. But Manchego is such a different personality than Maisie. So if you look, he's a long-haired black German Shepherd, where she's a short-haired working Shepherd, and you'll see their personalities come out in each of the paintings that I do.
Are you going to do one with both of them together in a painting?
Yes, not Yeah, that's going to be a while yet. I would say maybe another 6 months or so where they'll be together. But I'm also working on a project with using a friend's dog as a model. And her name is Lilac, the dog. And she is also a German Shepherd. So she will join in the painting with Manchego. So we have that to look forward to this next year. So
Mark, I have I want to swing back to childhood really quickly. Sure. You talked about the drawings that you were doing. What were the subjects that you were interested in as a child?
Two things. First, it was with school projects like astronomy, like learning in science class or let's say biology class, just doing drawings of whether it was the planets or the clouds, things like that.
Oh, that's so nice. Because sometimes it's like cartoons or the comics. I know a lot of people draw that.
Right. But then also, because I was a big sports fan, I would draw baseball players, football players, basketball players. I would, try to redo the logos of the teams. And I still have stacks and stacks of papers that I would draw on. My dad would actually bring home stacks of papers because everything used to be on paper. And he was a soda pop salesman. And he would bring home documents rather than discarding them. We were literally just recycling the paper. And I was using the backside of them to draw. So it's kind of fun to go back and look at those old pencil drawings and turn it over and see like minutes from a meeting or something in 1972. So that was kind of fun.
So wonderful that you still have them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the page that's making me hungry right now is looking at your page with all the different steaks. I mean, you've elevated T-bones and filet and different other kinds of cuts.
Oh, I know. I love those.
Those are really awesome. I mean, and I haven't had lunch yet, so I think, oh, I need to have something else to eat. So
it's funny that you bring that up. As you said, you're looking at them, and my website has three primary categories. One is companions, which is people's pets and German Shepherds. The other is faith, which we talked about. And the other one is just called the collection. And that's, I decided to try painting some meat just as an exercise. And I painted some small ones and they turned out really well. So some of the ones that are on my website that you'll see, they're as high as 36 inches, 24 inches wide. And I do have an entire series of the meat that I have taken to shows this last summer, just to test them out, see what the reception was. But it was kind of interesting to see the difference between people's reactions to the meat versus the reactions to the whimsical German Shepherds.
What were the differences?
Well, I would say the meat was much more serious. People took it much more seriously.
Did they like it though?
They liked it. I think some people were scratching their heads, like, why are you painting meat? And one of the things about the meat, because people can't see that right now, I wanted to paint meat that was very appetizing. Because sometimes when people paint eat, they make it very, almost violent, I would say. Like they're really into the blood and the splash of the red paint. But I wanted to make it something appetizing that people were pleased to look at.
Looks like me that they're all raw. Is that?
Yes, they are. They are.
Oh, okay, good.
people who buy the small ones will buy them for a friend. They don't know what else to get them, but you know what? Bob would love a piece of meat, that sort of thing. Or a sister buying it for a brother. I've had people buy it for their meat club, believe it or not. So.
And they're almost photorealistic when you look at them. I mean, I realize they're paintings, but you look at them, they almost look like they could be photographs at times. Mm-hmm. The detail that you have.
Very novel.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Outside of the things you've already painted, what do you have on the agenda maybe to paint down the road, some other subject?
So what I'm going to start to do, because not everybody loves German Shepherds, not everybody necessarily wants a painting of my German Shepherd, it's really to give them an idea of how I can paint their animals. So I do a lot of commissions. But what I'm going to start to do is sprinkle in other people's dogs. So I had mentioned I'm going to pair Manchego up with a friend's dog and then do more varietal German Shepherds, maybe some white Shepherds, some short-haired black Shepherds. Again, just to uh, just to work with the different colors and give folks different ideas of things I can do with their dogs. So, but I am definitely over the next 5 months or so, 6 months, going to really be focused on Manchego with kind of a renaissance feel to them.
Have you ever thought about working in another medium? I mean, you pretty much mastered this one. Is there something like, oh, I want to do sculpture or is something else?
No, I tried oils for a while, you know, still painting, but so much goes into painting with oils, you know, ventilation and the cleanup and the setup. I'm just really enjoying the acrylic. I think I've got a long way to go with the acrylic before I tried something else. I'm really enjoying this and building the portfolio around it.
Have you had a solo show yet?
We've done a couple calorie nights in the Milwaukee area. And I'm going to have a couple of paintings featured in a gallery long-term for an art appraisal gentleman here in the Milwaukee area. And we're framing the paintings with big, bold, gold ornate frames. So that's going to be pretty exciting.
You know, we're in our final minute here, and this has gone just way too fast because you just have such a great story to tell. But we want to know how people can find you online. If you have any upcoming exhibits that you can talk about, this will air like mid-December. But yeah, tell us a little bit about what's coming down the pike.
Sure. So real quick, you can find me at, first of all, on Instagram at Mark Zanowski Art. And then my website is just markzanowski.com. And then first show of the year, we've got in South Bend at For the Love of Art. So I'm very excited about that. I think it's on the 7th and 8th of February. And then right from there, going to be heading to Florida. So that's my first big stint in Florida. I'll be in places like Naples, Fort Lauderdale, Bonita Springs. And then I'll head back for a bit of a break in, say, late March. And then we'll head out further into the Midwest, hopefully South Carolina, Kentucky, that sort of thing.
That's great. Well, this has been a great interview, Mark. That's Mark Zanowski. You can see him at For the Love of Art Fair, February 7th and 8th at the South Bend Century Center. And he'll be there, and it'll be a wonderful time. You can see his work in person, meet him, and you can find him online at markzanowski.com. And, of course, if you click on his picture on our website, it'll take you right there. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the show and just sharing your wonderful journey.
Thank you for having me. This was really a lot of fun.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Art on the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is author Christopher Grayson, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome M.B. Henry to Art on the Air. M.B. is a lifelong student of history, especially military history. She has visited battlefields and historical sites all over the world. She has a degree in cinema and comparative literature and has served as historical consultant and researcher on films and television in Los Angeles. She is also involved in comedic community theater. She is the author of two books, As the Storm Clouds Gather and All the Lights Above Us, and two books will be released next year, 2026. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, MB. Very, very nice meeting you.
So lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, MB, we want our whole audience to know your entire background. Call it your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Well, I grew up in Iowa. A small town called Albernett. I've been a writer since I could hold a pen. I started with poetry. When Columbine happened, I was completely devastated, and I wrote this poem about it, and I sent it to President Clinton, and he responded back. So that was kind of my first experience with, wow, writing can help me process, it can move people, it can capture feelings. And I think that was kind of the moment that I decided I wanted to be a writer. I dabbled in screenwriting for a while, but I didn't really get anywhere with that. I moved to Los Angeles to pursue that. Ended up working in film, which is the researching and consulting historically, because I fell in love with history when I was in high school. And I wanted to write this screenplay about World War II, but it wasn't working and it wasn't working and I couldn't figure it out. And I finally realized that, like, as a screenwriter, you kind of just write the blueprint. You leave the emotion and a lot of the creativity up to the director and the actors. And I realized that I couldn't detach from the material that much. I wanted to provide all that, you know, emotional color. So I decided to try it as a book. And I've been writing books ever since. That was in 2011. So I decided to try to get published in 2015. I queried that very first book I ever wrote. I queried it and I queried it and I queried it and I didn't really get any bites. And then one day I had an idea about, you know, since World War II is kind of my bread and butter historically, I had an idea about, my gosh, you know who you never hear from in history? The women. And like, this idea just came to me about D-Day. And how just large, massive scale invasion, what must that have been like for the civilians caught in the crossfire? I mean, we hear so many military accounts, but you don't hear much about what it must have been like for just the everyday people trying to live their lives. And you especially don't really hear much from the women. So that's how All the Lights Above Us came to be. It took me about a year and a half to between research and writing. When I queried it, I got an agent on the 11th query, which is pretty quick. That was in 2020. And I got the book deal in early 2021 for that. And that was my debut book that came out in 2022.
Excellent. So what about your school life? Like, were you interested in writing? Do you have lots of books at home, you know, growing up?
Oh, yeah, lots of books? I have a whole room in our house that is just a library. It's a compilation of all my research materials, plus just books that I like, books that look pretty, books that are excellent. I definitely was into writing in school. I went to the University of Iowa, graduated in 2007, and my degree was in cinema and comp lit because I originally wanted to pursue screenwriting, but I immensely enjoyed my time at U of I. Had teachers there that just had a huge impact on me and were so supportive, and same within high school. My history teacher in high school was a very impactful teacher. He made a big mark on me, and I blame him for the history interest.
So, yeah, I was wondering how early that started.
I mean, I went through an ancient Egypt phase when I was in sixth grade, but really it was like high school when my history interest really took off, and I do largely credit my high school history teacher with that. So.
Because he made it so interesting, or?
He made it unbelievably interesting. He gave just very passionate lectures, made it personable, like put you in other generations' shoes. Like, he was just very, very good at his job.
Well, and the detail in your books, and in my case, I'm referring to Storm Clouds Gather, and I'm a pilot, so of course I never flown in World War One aircraft, but there was quite a bit of detail in actually the mechanics of, like, say, flying and all the things like that. And, you know, I'm sure in a history class you don't necessarily get that, or history background, but, you know, that seemed to be very well researched in terms of the mechanics of that type of thing.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I have to credit my father for that, who is also a pilot, and he is very interested in World War II aviation is more his game, but he knows everything about airplanes, flying, The Wright brothers. He's also a huge number one fan of the Wright brothers. So like, he's very familiar with the early stages of aviation, and he walked me through that, gave me great notes, helped me make it as realistic as possible. So yeah.
I know, I don't think I would ever climb into one of those aircraft.
You know, me neither.
You're flying basically wooden paper, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
So does your research on the military also include films, or is it mostly reading?
It's mostly reading, although I have been impacted by a lot of films. Saving Private Ryan obviously knocked my life in another direction when I saw it. 1917 had a big impact on me. I would say movies, while they don't figure as prominently into my research, they really, really give me inspiration to, you know, how I want to tell my own story about that subject matter.
So do you have a list of topics for all your books? Like you say, okay, I've done this. So do you have kind of like your mapped out future books and everything? You know, what's your process about kind of brainstorming about what books you're going to be doing?
You know, it's just, I'm a firm believer in the whimsical a little bit, in that the story chooses the author. I get such random inspiration for things. For example, I'm working on a rough draft of a book right now that takes place during the Black Plague. And I think inspiration struck me for that because I found myself processing what we lived through with COVID. I found that impacted me, you know, a lot more than I realized. And it just kind of, all of a sudden I was like, the Black Death is one of the worst, if not the worst, you know, epidemiological crisis to hit humanity. And so I just kind of started reading some books, and then I was like, well, there's my next book. You know, I think it will help me and others process what we lived through, you know, and how jarring that was and life upending for a lot of us. So
we hear from a lot of authors that there are hundreds of manuscripts under the bed. Do you have that same box of books under the bed?
I have a whole list of completed manuscripts that haven't been published yet. It wasn't until my fourth book that I wrote that I got a book deal. So I still have two of those original three that I wrote are unpublished. And then I have a whole list of ideas for future projects that I want to write. So I think, and sometimes I get so excited about them that it's hard to focus on just one. And, you know, like, so,
Are there moments you feel like diving back into the ones you've written and see if you can improve on them or change?
Oh, yeah. I look back at my already written books all the time. Like when I have downtime, I'm not giving up on them. Like I think they'll find their home someday, even though they were initially rejected. I still believe in them both. One of them takes place during World War II and one takes place during the Civil War, actually. So I think their time will come. Just got to keep working on them, keep improving and keep trying. So
let's take Storm Clouds Gather and kind of we'll also have you read an excerpt from it. But talk about what brought you to that story. You know, you kind of talked in general, but what brought you to that specific one? I know you use a mix of historical events and actually some actual living historical people mixed in with your fictional characters. But tell us about that process. What brought you to that and your character development, especially your two protagonists in that story?
It's actually a really fun story how this book came to be. The first book I ever wrote follows a young man and his experience fighting in Hurricane Forest in World War II. It was, the first book I ever wrote. I'm very, very emotionally attached to it. And that was the one that I queried that didn't really get anywhere. A couple years later, you know, when you study World War II, you kind of have to know the basics of World War I. So I started reading some World War I books, and I just, gosh, you know, this is a fascinating time. So I decided to write a prequel to that book following that young man's parents in World War One. So that is the origin stories of those two protagonists. Is they're actually this young, and at I don't want to blow the ending, but like, you know, so, like that's how they came to be. And like, so for me, it was just, eventually I decided to split those two stories up and make them, you know, separate. But like, it just tickles me that, you know, a book that I wrote so long ago and, you know, didn't, since the first one got rejected, I didn't know that this one would have much of a chance, but I was very tickled that a part of that series was picked up, and Roland and Ilsa's story is out there now.
And it really serves as a prequel to this yet unpublished book. Maybe you'll go back Correct. And revisit.
Yep. Yeah. So there's actually, yeah. So the roles reverse a little bit, like, so.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Just give us a thumbnail summary. And one thing about the style of it, what I'll say, is how you switch between the stories of the protagonists. You know, like each chapter is headlined with the name of it. And, well, until the very end, but we won't give that away. But it's kind of interesting how you do that. You know, it's like, you know, this is Ilsa's story, this is Roland's story. So, what brought you to that style?
Well, I wanted to, World War One was such an all-encompassing conflict, and I just wanted to include as many angles as possible, the medical angle, the battle angle, the aviation angle, which is one of my favorite aspects of that war to study. And so I decided to kind of create two different storylines so we could get as much, I guess, experience maybe of World War One through these two as possible. And then, you know, obviously I wanted them each to meet some of these fascinating historical figures that came out of that time, like Frank Luke and Tubby and, you know. So I think that's, I just wanted to encompass as much of World War One as I could, so.
Well, maybe we should take a listen to a sample from that book just to give our listeners a sample of it so they may want to go out and get it and read it.
I would love to. And I picked a scene that actually involves one of those historical figures, Reverend Tubby, as he was so affectionately called, Clayton. He started Talbot House in World War One, which was kind of a safe space for soldiers to get away from the fighting. There was no vice allowed, so it was kind of just purely about relaxation, and they did theater shows, there was a tea room, a music room, a writing room. It was just like a wonderful way to bring peace to a war-shattered place, and Tubby's story just inspired me so much, so I thought we could meet him in this reading.
Okay, this is M.B. Henry's Storm Clouds Gather.
You must be Ilsa Stahl. Ilsa whirled to face a stocky, well-built man with a gentle smile and thick-rimmed glasses. Instead of a uniform, he sported a blue blazer with a telling white square on the collar, a man of the cloth. She quickly collected herself. Reverend. The man took her hand and gave it an old-fashioned peck with his lips. Please, call me Tubby. Ilsa stifled a laugh at such a silly nickname, even if it did seem to suit him. Yes. Certainly, Mr. Tubby. Pardon my asking, but how do you know me? You're here to see Roland Hawkins, yes? A charming American fellow, I say. He told me he needed a safe place to meet with you. I told him you could come here. He gave her a stern, only half-joking wink. Provided we all behave ourselves, of course. Ilsa couldn't help but giggle. Yes, of course. Could you tell me where I might find him? Roland usually prefers the quiet reading rooms over the ruckus down here. If he isn't there, let's pray he ventured into the third floor chapel. It would do that boy some good. Ilsa grinned. She didn't imagine Roland as the praying type, but she didn't dare say that to a minister. Thank you for your help. Tubby gave her a polite bow. Please come find me if you can't locate him. And do please behave if you locate him. With that, Tubby stepped into the canteen room, joining in the boisterous singing at the piano.
And that's from As Storm Clouds Gather with our guest today, M.B. Henry, author from Valparaiso.
So, M.B., who do you rely on for first readings? Do you have, is it family? Is it friends?
I used to have a close circle of friends that I would give them my first drafts for notes. But now I usually first read goes to either my husband or my agent. My agent used to be an editor, so she is incredibly helpful with hammering out the ugly of a first draft and turning it into something beautiful that people can actually read. First drafts are, they're rough. So she usually gives me my first round of notes. I'm now actually a little protective of manuscripts before they're published. So very few people see it in its early stages. So
you have to be careful who you trust, I guess, in this day and age, right?
It's true. I don't want that winding up on the internet.
Well, so speaking of small groups, you mentioned community theater. Do you have a specific group that you meet with, or do you, yes, or do you
yes,
plays
I
that are
actually,
have
my
comedy?
My material that I write, I'm sure you noticed, is a little dark. So I started getting involved with Chicago Street Theater. A few years ago, my husband and I had the great good fortune to direct the play That Goes Wrong at Chicago Street Theater, and we had a ball, and it just provided this whole outlet for me to get away from some of the darkness that I write about and just laugh and bring laughter to the world. So I've been volunteering at Chicago Street ever since. I also went on to direct the 39 Steps, which was last year. It's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes type murder mystery, but lots of mayhem and chaos. It was a great experience. It made me laugh. It made others laugh. And laughter, I think, is very important right now.
So. Did you have any theater background before?
Yeah, I was in theater in high school. I was in musicals mostly, so comedy was a step out of my comfort zone. But now it's a great way for me to be creative without having to be so dark.
What musicals? What roles?
I was in Calamity Jane as Calamity Jane, and I was also in Fiddler on the Roof. I played the mom. So,
oh. Very yeah. good. Golda.
Yes, that's right. I couldn't remember her name.
I'm a theater guy,
so. It's been a long time.
So what do you do for fun outside of writing and theater?
I love travel. My husband and I both love to travel. We've been all over the place. I also like photography. I do mostly just kind of flowers, butterflies, pretty leaves. I don't really do anything professional by any means, but it's just like a fun thing to do. And then I also enjoy a good jigsaw puzzle on a rainy day.
It's a good brain exercise.
It is.
It kind of lets you shut off your thoughts. You can play some music, shut off your thoughts, put the little pieces together and it's
shape
nice.
Recognition.
Yeah, exactly.
With the theater thing, this is just an aside. Have you ever done improv? Is that something that you've tried?
I did improv in high school for speech contests, and it was the worst 5 minutes of my life. I am never doing improv ever again. I froze solid, couldn't think of anything, and it was terrible. So I don't think I'm the improv type.
Yeah, it's a special talent to do improv because you have to think, run your feet, and you have to be willing to take what is given to you from your handoff partners. So, the if then this, and that's sometimes difficult for people to pull that off. I mean, that's a whole art in and of itself. So,
oh my gosh, hats off to them. It's an amazing gift. So.
Well, we have about a minute and a half left here. So I want to give you a chance to tell us how people can find what books you do have, where they can find them, where they can find out more about you or reaching out and contacting you.
The best place is my website, and it's a very simple mbhenry.com. You can learn everything about me there, my background. I have a history blog there. You can learn what books I have out, what books are coming, release dates, and where you can buy them. It's all on mbhenry.com.
And do you do any local book signings?
I do. I've done events at the Press and Barnes & Noble here in Valpo, and I would love to do, I'm going to talk to them again when my next book comes out. So I'll also post updates for all of that on my website as well.
Sure. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your literary journey and everything else. We'll have your picture on our website with a link to your website so you can people can find you when they go there. And the website is mb-henry.com. You can see all the books she has. Of course, As Storm Clouds Gathers was the one I really dug into, as well as the other ones she shared with us, and we appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, MB, and sharing your whole journey.
Thank you again for having me. I had a marvelous time.
Yeah, thank you so much. Best of luck.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.